It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Stacy are here. They're both back. We have lots to talk about. Google gets its day in the Supreme Court. Today, we'll talk about the harassment charges at Google and what it means to have a great corporate culture. And is it possible in Silicon Valley? It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig, This Week in Google, episode 480, recorded Wednesday, October 31st, 2018. Oyez, oyez, oyez. This Week in Google is brought to you by Privacy.com. Stop using the same card number everywhere. Use Privacy virtual cards and get a $5 credit off your first purchase. Learn more and sign up in under a minute with your debit or checking account at privacy.com/twig. And by WordPress. Reach more customers when you build your business website on WordPress.com. Plans start at just $4 a month, and you'll get 15% off any new plan purchase at WordPress.com/twig. And by Slide Belts by Brig Taylor. High-quality, comfortable ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. If you want a better belt, go to slidebelts.com/twit and use the code TWIT for 20% off. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover the latest news from Google. And hail, hail, the gang's all here. I'm so pleased to see Jeff Jarvis from the City University of New York at buzzmachine.com in his lovely home. Will trick-or-treaters be pestering us this evening?
We live on large acre lots, so they have to be really good coming down a long, hilly driveway. It's not worth it.
I never buy candy because we're in a cul-de-sac in the country.
Oh, you guys, it's the best part of Halloween.
That's Stacy Higginbotham, and she will
nice
be
one.
Leaping to her feet. She's monitoring the front door with her Nest Cam, and at any moment she may have to run in. What are we doing for candy this week?
I put a sample up here. We have Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah.
Also Swedish Fish, but I didn't bring those up because they are not. Oh, good.
I would eat those if I had them. I thought you were going to say, I'm not going to bring them because I'll eat them.
Nope. And
see,
I have both peanut and plain M&Ms.
Yum. I would eat those.
I want Stacy to do to the kids what she does to her husband with her IoT stuff.
You know,
use the Ring doorbell to scare the bejesus out of them.
And you can have your Hue lights play spooky sounds, motion sensitive, all that.
We do, and we have done Halloween lights. One year, Anna and I did set up a Halloween thing at our door. So when you triggered a motion sensor at the bottom of the steps coming up to our front door, it would turn on a blow dryer that would make a gloss go, woo!
Oh, that's good.
There was a lot of latency, so really what happened was the ghost just would randomly, to the kid's perspective, just go, woo! But, you know.
Latency is the death of a great Halloween scare. Yeah.
Exactly.
Because everything's about timing when it's Halloween.
Yeah, I find latency scary all the time on the show, yeah.
Yes. Since latency's hard when you're doing Skype as well. Well, Jeff, is there anything that's happened over the last few weeks that we might have talked about but you didn't get to?
Oh, God knows. Don't say that. Don't remind me of the last few weeks.
Well, what about here's one. Jimmy Wales firing the journalists at his journalistic startup, the Wiki Tribune.
Yep, and I haven't actually heard from him yet, and I was a funder of Wiki Tribune, so I should find out what's going on. I think that Jimmy's model of having the professional journalists work with the public, I think, was him trying, and it kind of didn't work. And now he's handed the keys to the public.
Because the professional journalists were dismissive of the public.
Some of them. We had one of our social journalism students working there, graduates working there, and he wasn't.
He wouldn't be. No, of course not.
I mean, journalists, in some ways, we are dismissive because we have a very real culture thing.
Right.
Like, I remember hiring someone who was not a journalist who I didn't find out until, and actually someone else hired him. I didn't until, and I was his managing editor. He actually owned shares in Apple and was our Apple reporter.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a, I miss the journalistic standard, to be honest with you. And I do think that, I mean, it's not hard to communicate that and put it in writing and have them sign something that says you don't own shares in companies you cover. There's some basic tenets that I think aren't that hard to communicate.
No, well, there's so I'm involved in the Reporters Without Borders Journalism Trust Initiative.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. That's scary Halloween stuff. And me in Paris, that's the nice part. But I got shouted out of the room practically when I said that it's our job to listen to the public and understand the public and be responsive to many communities, diverse communities, and all this. The journalists are still in this, many of them, this snotty mode that we know best.
Well, that's not going to serve them well in the new fascistic era that this country.
So I'm reading right now.
World is entering.
Paul Starr's Creation of Media, a rather magisterial history of media in the U.S. And if I may, class, I found it really interesting that before the Bill of Rights, when the fight was going on between the Federalists and the others about the Bill of Rights, that the original versions kind of, now I'm not going to find it, the Pennsylvania Bill of Rights, for example, I'm not going to find it right away. But it said, here we go, the Pennsylvania Declaration of Rights stating, quote, that the people have a right to freedom of speech and of writing and publishing their sentiments. Therefore, the freedom of the press ought not to be restrained. What comes first there?
The people.
The voice of the people.
Yeah.
And as it got mushed together and rewritten and added in and made into a First Amendment, that spirit that was very much part of the founders' view, those who believed in the First in the Bill of Rights, got kind of lost.
Journalists are people first, and their rights.
No, the people we cover are people first.
But that's the point, is that the journalists have rights because the people have rights.
Yes, exactly. And it's the job of the journalist to help the people to be heard.
Yes. Okay, we've done our.
That's our obligatory
journalistic update.
We haven't lost the entire audience in the first 3 minutes.
Yeah, I was like, that's brave, starting off with journalism.
How about we start with sexism? Andy Woo-hoo! Rubin paid $90 million, and I think we had some suspicions about why Andy Rubin, the guy who created Android, left so abruptly, left Google, started Essential. Larry Page, in his public farewell, said, I want to wish Andy all the best with what's next with Android. He created something truly remarkable with 1 billion-plus happy users. But what Google did not make public, we've learned from a report in the New York Times, was that he had been accused of sexual misconduct. Google investigated, found the claim credible, and asked for Andy Rubin's resignation. But instead of escorting him out the door, they handed him a $90 million exit package. $2 million a month for 4 years. Google said, this apparently has happened in a number of cases. Google said that the New York Times story contains numerous inaccuracies. Actually, Andy Rubin said that.
Yeah, Andy
Rubin. I'm sorry. Numerous inaccuracies and wild exaggerations about my compensation, and he denies the sexual misconduct allegation. After the publication of the article, Sundar Pichai, Google CEO, wrote an email to employees with Eileen Naughton, their vice president for people operations, that the company had fired 48 people for sexual harassment over the last 2 years and that none of them received an exit package, not addressing specifically the Andy Rubin case.
Stacey, you're first.
Okay, because I have some things to say about this. One, Andy Rubin, unfortunately, we've decided to make Andy Rubin a poster child. And his issue, while not great, was not actually, to me, the most problematic. So his was consensual sexual contact, I guess, with a colleague. Whereas I found some of the other allegations, such as the head of Google X hardware, I found his allegations way more troubling.
Now, he's out, by the way. He just resigned. And without apparently compensation.
Good. And I also found, so what's interesting here is there is the degree of stories and how they kind of fall across the spectrum of incredibly egregious, such as the hardware dude, propositioning.
Sexual misconduct covers a broad range.
Yes. So that guy propositioning a 24-year-old during a job interview feels like, hey, buddy, that's just not cool.
Well, it's even worse than that, because he says he knew she wasn't going to get hired, but he misrepresented it and invited her to Burning Man with him.
Yeah, is that worse? I think it's worse just to proposition someone in a job interview. I'm going to go with that. I mean, had she gotten hired in this situation, would that have been great?
Yeah, that's bad too. But she didn't get hired. And was it because she turned him down? We're talking about Rich Duvall. He is the guy behind, one of the founders of Project Loon. And he did not receive an exit package when he resigned today.
Yay. And then the Drummond case was also troubling in a different way, because it showed how men get protected in a way, even among a consensual relationship between people in their departments, without a policy put in place by HR dealing with dating between colleagues.
He apparently fathered a child with a subordinate.
Which, again, that's totally consensual, which is very, which...
Yeah, so some of this is a violation of company policy, because you're not supposed to have a relationship with a subordinate, a direct report.
And they moved her from being a direct report, but unfortunately they moved her and she went down in the company.
Yeah, she got moved out of the legal department to sales. She was a contract manager on Google's legal team, and she felt like she was kind of pushed aside, basically.
Yes.
And he continued as chief counsel or general counsel.
And this fall, I mean, that is unsurprising to me, but it follows along with an entire culture of... promiscuity is the wrong thing, but the founders of Google, the CEO of Google, the former CEO of Google, they dated people within the company. They had a well-publicized kind of laissez-faire attitude towards relationships with people, which is not in and of itself terrible. But when you pull all of that together, you see how this happened, and it is incredibly frustrating. And that sort of culture is terrible for women.
Amit Singhal, who was the head of search at Google, was forced out, went to Uber, and then got fired at Uber because he didn't tell them he'd left Google over a sexual harassment allegation.
Right. One thing that I found interesting in the story, I think the Times story was very good, is that part of the compensation of Andy Rubin is that Larry Page saying that Andy Rubin didn't get full value for what he brought to Google in Android.
Google made billions and billions and continues to make billions on Android.
But what's interesting to me in that is that there's a screwed up structure here of kind of the star system and the person versus the product, right? I mean, in a proper world, Andy Rubin should have had, I'm being simplistic here, but such appropriate ownership in Android, if he was that valuable to it, that he got that the compensation came through that, instead of saying that he's the star who deserves the money, right? The money should flow through the company and the creation in a way, if that makes any sense at all. But it became kind of a guy, star thing where, well, he brought such value. He did make such a freaking fortune on what he brought. Let's wave goodbye to him, but pay him a lot of money. To my mind, he should have already had that compensation built in somehow, and it was a judgment of Android's value versus his value. If that makes any sense.
Well, it does. Now, when you buy a company, it's kind of like investing in a house, right? When you buy a company through M&A, you are making an investment in most cases. So they invested in that, and Google and Android, the value accelerated. And yes, his current compensation should reflect that. But once he's pushed out, you have to draw the line. You have to say, hey, I know it'd be awesome as we keep making money on Android, you keep making money on Android. But A, the deal wasn't set up that way in the first place. And B, you shouldn't be able to benefit from an investment on something if you've been kicked out of the company for sexual misconduct. I don't know. I mean, we don't let felons vote.
So I guess really for us, the big story is not, I mean, not these individual cases, but is there some sort of corporate culture, toxic culture at Google? And does it persist today?
Really? Are we asking that question? Because yes and yes. And there has been and there will be until we get people to actually clean it up. I mean, this is actually probably a really good sign. And I think this reckoning that's happening across Silicon Valley is it's really a good sign. And I'm glad that companies are doing this as painful and as excruciating as it is for them.
You think Google's reformed?
I think they're trying to reform.
They're trying. I think that's right, Stacey. Yeah.
I mean, how many employees does Google have now?
Lots.
Lots.
That's like the official answer.
Tens of thousands.
Yes.
So you can't change that overnight, but they should be trying to change that. And hopefully they can and will. I think hiring, you know, hey, more women, broadening your hiring pool will probably help. So, you know, maybe you don't go to the same universities, or maybe you don't take recommendations from certain people. I don't know.
Yeah. And the other question is, with a lack of diversity, I think you're right, Stacey, the diverse hiring is the key solution, and diverse promoting, more important, is key solution. Mm-hmm. And one wonders, with such low numbers on race, what the situation is like for people of color in the company too. But it's Stacey's right. It's endemic, not just to Google. It's the Valley.
Isn't it also the nation, but it's the Valley in an intense way. I feel like Google is kind of the same as Uber in this respect, that when they started, it was small. It was a bunch of graduate students. They had very loose kind of practices, and they didn't mature. The company, as it got bigger and more valuable, and more importantly, had a greater impact on society, they didn't mature. They still kind of maintained that party atmosphere.
I think there is a culture of immaturity across most of the startup world. And part of that is we can call it the bro culture. I don't know if it really is, but it is the work hard, move fast, break things, right? That is very much an immature philosophy, right? It is very cavalier in a way that maturity tends to change you and make you less cavalier about the world. And that has its pros and cons, right? Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing to think about here is how Wall Street has rewarded the tech community. And as the tech community became such a hot commodity and generated so much wealth, a lot of the people who used to want to work on Wall Street went to tech. And I think you have to think about the type of person who values incredible amounts of money and is willing to risk it all. We portray this as like geeky engineers trying to do things, but that's actually not entirely true. It is a geeky engineer who is willing to do, maybe cross some ethical lines. Maybe it's a geeky engineer who's willing to work, you know, 100 hours a week. There's a very similar persona at work there, if that makes sense. Did I not explain that well?
Yeah, it's on the one hand, there's an optimism and an empowerment that I so admire about the technologists. On the other hand,
I don't think that's actually true. I think they come out.
I was about to do the other hand.
Okay. On the other hand,
I think that architecturally there is that, and these tools are empowering, and that is what I admire about Silicon Valley. But the problem is,
you have to have a little chutzpah and boldness to reinvent the world. And you have certain arrogance too, right? You have to, Steve Jobs said the thing that changed his life was realizing that the world was created, the rules were created by people not any smarter than himself, and he could do whatever he wanted. And look at Elon Musk. And look, I think that kind of world changing vision, I mean, you might not want to be friends with these people, but it is.
I so fundamentally disagree. And I think that is the mythic founder. That's the founder myth that we put up there.
Right.
But there are founders who are not. There are founders whose companies do well, who actually treat people well. And so, yes, you have to be willing to take risks, but you don't have to be willing to take risks at the expense of an entire population of people, or at the expense of knowing that you're doing something wrong.
You know,
I think you see Mark Benioff trying to be a model in that way.
Mm-hmm.
But honestly,
and you see others, it's possible.
Even running the small business that I run, one of the things that's hard about running a business is that sometimes you have to kind of be an asshole. Mm-hmm. You have to do things that as a human you wouldn't want to do, like fire people. You wouldn't want to do that. But
okay,
for the good
difference.
Of the business, for the good of the business, you have to be a little ruthless.
Yeah.
There is a difference between being a little bit of an asshole and being an asshole.
And like, I'm hoping that I'm so only a little bit of one.
We're going to have to bleep this episode 10 times.
And you can't, I mean, firing someone for cause is actually not being an asshole. I'm sorry. It's someone saying.
Let me give you a different scenario.
Okay.
And, I was just reading about a company, and I can't remember what it was, where a longtime employee just didn't have a role anymore in the company. I think it was Amazon. And I think Bezos just, kind of, oh no, Netflix. This was the Netflix debate. Okay. We can bring Netflix in.
Netflix culture. Yes.
The Netflix culture, which is radical, they say, and I don't know one way or the other, radical transparency and honesty, but it sometimes it looks pretty ruthless because the founder of Netflix, Reed Hastings, had to fire, I think it was a high school friend, because he just no longer was of use to the company. Not that he did something wrong, but
that is an okay reason to fire.
Why you have to, if you Steve Jobs always said, you don't want any, you need all A employees, because you bring in one C employee, they may not do anything wrong, but they bring the whole level down because everybody stops performing. You have to be a little ruthless in those. By the way, I am not that ruthless. But
everybody who works for you is an A. I know
they're all A's.
Is an A.
But I have had to at times let go of somebody, not because he was bad or wasn't a great hard worker, but because we didn't have a role for him.
Yeah.
And that's very, very hard.
It is hard, but it is fair. And there's ways you can do that. So at GigaOM, we had a person who, and GigaOM may not be a shining example because it did implode, but we had a person who their role just disappeared. And
GigaOM
gave them 2 months and said, hey, we don't have a spot for you. Please go use this time, still contribute to the company, but also find another job. And that's what this person did. And it's because we had trust among our employees. And I guarantee you a place like 37 Signals. Yes, that's the name of the company.
Yeah, they used to be 37 Signals. They've changed their name, but I know.
Oh, now there's something there. I mean, there is a way to do this. And maybe, yes, you're not going to generate all the profits. That's why GigaOM is a terrible example, because right now we are cutting costs in people. You put making more money in front of how you treat people. And
a company is a company.
That's a
company.
Here's the Wall Street Journal.
You can make money.
Here's the Wall Street Journal article from last week about Netflix's ruthless culture. People who speak highly of Netflix's culture say the company's critics included former employees who were fired for performance reasons and are disgruntled about their personal experiences. They talk about the keeper test. Several former colleagues describe Mr. Hastings in complimentary terms as, quote, unencumbered by emotion. In just the past year and a half, Mr. Hastings has employed the keeper test. That is, let me see if I can get the keeper test. Is this
person a keeper?
Is this person worth keeping? Yeah.
And are they worth fighting for? That's the other thing.
Yeah. Employees are encouraged to give one another blunt feedback. Managers are told to apply a keeper test to their staff, asking themselves whether they would fight to keep a given employee, a mantra for firing people who don't fit the culture and ensuring only the strongest survive. In other words, if you wouldn't fight to keep that employee, then we're getting rid of him. Last year, Hastings fired Neil Hunt, the longtime chief product officer who had helped create Netflix's famed algorithm that curates programming for viewers. He was one of Netflix's earliest employees and had been Mr. Hastings' close friend for decades. Mr. Hastings told Mr. Hunt, a lot had changed, and one of your underlings, Greg Peters, is now better for the job. You're gone. So that's pretty ruthless.
Well, look at GE. No. GE, which was vaunted. Now GE's, nearing death practically. But GE at its height, the belief was you constantly culled.
Yeah.
I consulted for a company for a while.
See, I think that seems like a horrible environment, and I wouldn't want to run a company that way. But honestly, this isn't the most successful company ever. And if you want to be an Amazon or a Netflix or a Google, you might have to be that way.
I was in a company that was acquired, and part of the rule when it was acquired was you have A, B, and C employees, and you need to get rid of your C employees, and B is the new C. And that wasn't wrong in an acquisition. To Stacey's earlier point, Stacey, the thing that's even worse than what you describe is where I've hired the wrong person. I made a mistake.
Well, it's always that way for me, right? Because it's all people I've hired.
Well, sometimes people just screw up and do the wrong things and you can say, well, they're not doing the job anymore. But I feel awful when after the fact I realized, no, I shouldn't hire that person in the first place. They weren't right for it. And it's my fault that they have to uproot their lives now. That's what feels the worst to me.
Oh, so, it's horrible. It's never, ever, ever, even if it's for cause, it's never a pleasant thing, ever. Yeah. And actually, I take pride in the fact, and Lisa does too, that we hate it. Because that tells me at least I'm not a horrible human.
Nice to you?
It breaks my heart. Oh, I've had, I had one employee cry.
They're still nice to you.
One guy burst into tears. That and then I said, okay, this was my mistake. I said, okay, you can keep your job. And then we had to fire him a few months later because he continued to screw up.
Oh, Leo.
Wow.
Well, I don't want to be that guy, but that's my point is that sometimes this kind of brutal culture.
Well, wait. Okay. I think you guys are confusing some things, and I think it's really important to not confuse those. There is brutal culture where you're like, you know, Fight Club, call everybody who doesn't perform 100% or even 95 and above all the time, right? Which I think is a pretty harsh culture, brutal. And there's firing someone or having a culture where you expect people to perform most of the time. And if they don't, they're gone. I mean, having fired people, it is not fun. And you have a duty to do it in a way that is respectful of what they have given the company.
Yes.
But it is not brutal to fire someone if they're not performing. Mm-hmm. It's not brutal to fire someone if you're going in a different direction. It is brutal to fire someone if you are callous about it. But, you know,
is culture talk overdone, Stacey and Leo? So much talk in the Silicon Valley is about instilling a culture and instilling the culture in all your new employees and doing all these things. Is that a bunch of hooey or is it real?
Oh, I don't think so.
I think it's maybe more talked about in Silicon Valley because it's a culture of there are a lot of engineering people. They're quote unquote data driven. So anything that's fluffy or not, you can't put metrics to, I think that becomes kind of culture. And then you can use it poorly and say, hey, this person isn't a culture fit because their name isn't Jared and they didn't go to my college. Or you can say, hey, the people at this company tend to behave a certain way and we value the following things. So in corporate America, instead of culture, we say mission statement, right? That's in Silicon Valley kind of the way I think it is.
I think you're going to get a culture.
Well, yeah, you're going to get a culture.
One way or the other.
People always behave one
way. Yeah, you're going to get a culture. So better to make it conscious, or at least attempt to make it conscious, and consciously an appropriate end. See, the problem is the human beings aren't businesses, even despite Supreme Court rulings to the contrary. And the business is really a very different thing and is, I don't think, particularly humane. I mean, I don't know.
Right.
I'm a terrible businessman. But it strikes me that you'd be better if you were completely ruthless in business. And
no, because no one would want to work for you.
Well, but ruthless in the sense that you reward excellence and that you let go anything less than excellent. And people would want to work for you.
Because in the day.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And you know it. Going in. This is the way the place
And Netflix apparently is that way as well.
Well, that's true. And in some cases, as long as it's advertised, like Netflix has this quote unquote brutal culture. Would I want to work there? Probably not.
No. You'd be happy working here, I think, because we're very.
Yes,
because
apparently if you fire me, I can just cry.
You cry and I'll go, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I didn't mean to make you cry.
I don't know where I was going with that. This is.
I fantasize about working for you, Leo.
I would be a good boss.
I fantasize about that. I think that would be an enjoyable life.
Well, in a way, you both do, right? I mean, you're hosts on the show. Yeah. We pay you to be on the show, and I mean, you're not employees; you're contractors. But I think we have good. We try to make the people that work here happy. We have massages once a month. We used to have them weekly.
Well,
we fed everybody lunch today. Every Wednesday, you get lunch. We're not Google. You don't get lunch every day.
if you think about business, most companies think about business only in terms of profit, right? So how much money you've made. There are other businesses out there. But that is not the only way to think about a business. You can actually, I mean, there are social, what are those corporations called?
Yeah, I feel like we have a family here, but we're a small business too. It's only 20 people, so.
Yeah, and when you think about making money, if you think about not just making money, but optimizing for every penny, you're going to make different decisions than if you were a business that was going to optimize for worker productivity, right? So you've got to think about that. And part of this will depend on the type of industry you're in. In tech, where there's high margins, it makes sense actually to invest in productivity. And maybe kindness, so you hire a different and wider worldview. I don't know.
Tech's also highly competitive, right?
In some areas.
And there's this huge amount of paranoia. Andy Grove of CEO Intel wrote, "Only the paranoid survive." Mm-hmm. You have to always be looking over your shoulder. The other guy's catching up with you. Those are the kinds of things that make a culture ruthless in a company.
No, I mean, I'm always looking over my shoulder for my business. I'm like, oh, shoot, what's happening? What kind of trends do I need to keep aware of? So I'm always looking over for that. But I still have a choice in how I behave towards people. Like if I look up and I say, hey, IoT is only going to be hot for 6 more months. Kevin's not any good at AI, which is the next big thing. So let me just fire Kevin and bring
Watch
on
out,
someone
Kevin.
Else.
Whoa. Kevin, are you watching?
Whoa.
Kevin.
I mean.
Better put that resume out. Go on LinkedIn,
no.
Kevin.
And that's good. That would be a hard thing to do, wouldn't it?
Yes. But when I look over my shoulder, let's say I'm looking, I'm paranoid because I am. I'm like, I never think. I'm like, oh, my God, tomorrow everything could dry up. So if I'm thinking along those lines, then I might say, oh, crap, Kevin, hey, I'm seeing this coming. What do you want to do about it? Here are options. And Kevin can say, Stacy, I hate AI. I hate industrial IoT. I'm going to go work on my Chromebook site. About Chromebooks.com, y'all. and that's a nice, not nice. I think that's a human way of looking at it versus me saying, oh, this is coming and freaking out and then killing.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm never going to be a multi-billionaire founder of a media company.
That's exactly my point.
But I also don't want that.
I don't want it either. Fortunately, Lisa does.
I've never had the courage to do that.
And you're fired! I don't know. I mean, I understand why corporate cultures kind of can be different and that sometimes they can be ruthless. And I think Silicon Valley in particular kind of lends itself to that. It's also different when a company's big because it's not as personal. And so the less personal it becomes, the easier it becomes to do the, quote, right thing rather than the humane thing. I don't know. It's an interest. I didn't expect to get into this conversation, but I think it's a good conversation.
Like from sexual harassment? Was that what we were talking about?
We started with Andy Rubin, and that's how this became. Let's take a little break. You guys pick your next story.
Oh, okay. Oh, we got to work for our money.
Got to
work
for your money now. Well, I have so many good ones, and I don't know where we want to go next.
Do.
But I'll let you each pick something that you think is worth studying while I mention privacy.com. This is a new sponsor, but a company I've been using for a long time. I can't remember when I set up my account, almost a year ago now, because I wanted a way to use a credit card online and feel good about it, to feel secure about it. Now, how many times have your credit card been stolen online? Mine, half a dozen times. And it's kind of a pain, especially because you have your credit card attached to a variety of accounts and you've got to go change and everything. With privacy.com, I never use the same credit card twice. You don't use the same password on every site. You know that's a bad idea. Same thing with a credit card. Privacy.com generates a brand new virtual Visa card number for every purchase you make online with one click. The minute that number is used by a merchant, it locks to that merchant. So only that merchant can use it. You can set a limit on spending per charge, per month, per year. And it's easy to freeze or unfreeze cards. So you'll never worry about being billed twice or upgraded without your consent. It's easy. I always use it for subscriptions. You don't have to worry about forgetting to cancel subscriptions or free trials. Just cancel the card. And on your the dashboard, you'll immediately know. In fact, you might know that a company's been hacked before the company knows, thanks to privacy.com. Another feature I really love about privacy.com is that I don't have to use my real address when using the card. So when I create a credit card and I use it, I can use any address I want. 123 Main Street, Anytown, USA. And privacy approves the charge. The merchant does not get my address. Complete anonymity. I love that. Privacy.com is easy to use because they have an extension for Chrome. They have an Android and iOS app that will quickly generate the cards easily on demand within the browser if you want. The cards are tied to your checking account or your debit card account. So these are not credit cards. It's a debit card, in effect. That means no interest, but it's also no cost to you. They make their money on the charge card fees to the merchant. In fact, they make so much money, you even can get money back, up to 5% back, depending on how much you use the card. I just love this. I just think it's the best way to go. Privacy.com's PCI DSS compliant. That's the same security standard your bank card's held to. They use, of course, high-grade encryption. In fact, they use split-key crypto so that even at privacy.com, no individual employee can see your account. The partial keys are held by separate employees, so access to the data on the server requires multiple keys to decrypt. It's kind of like the nuclear codes. I think this is brilliant. I use two-factor authentication, of course. They provide customers access to transaction data via a webhook API, so you can write your own little tool if you wish to scrape your privacy account. I get text messages. There's a great website with all sorts of information. 100% free to use. So do it now. Just go to privacy.com/twig. A little incentive will give you $5 off your first purchase, a little credit towards your first purchase if you go to privacy.com/twig. Privacy.com has saved customers over $100 million in unwanted and unauthorized charges due to compromised cards, hidden fees, forgotten subscriptions. It's the only card I use online now. I love it. Privacy.com/twig. You know, I could show you, actually, I did the other day. I could show you all my privacy.com cards because you can't use them. Only the merchant that uses the card first gets to use it. It's locked into that merchant. I love it. Privacy.com/twig. Stacey Higginbotham, StaceyOnIoT.com, the Stacey on IoT, the IoT podcast with Kevin Toefel, apparently who's on the chopping block.
might be watching this.
No, we're teasing Kevin. You know you're not on the chopping block. Actually, I could see a move towards AI. Isn't AI kind of the next big thing?
Well, it's the current big thing, and an integral part of IoT. So I'm not...
For instance,
it's not hard.
Here's my story. Google and Roomba are working together because Roomba's that vacuum cleaner. We have one that goes around your house vacuuming. It has a map of your home. Google and Roomba want to share that data. The aim to make smart homes more thoughtful by leveraging the unique data set collected by iRobot, a map of your house. You must have covered this on the IoT podcast.
We did. We did talk about it this morning.
Yeah. What do you think?
So one, it's opt-in. Two, the data that's pulled from this is not going to go to Google's advertising business. So from our perspective, there's a couple things that are important to note here. One, Google's actually letting you say you want to share this data. They're also offering consumers something in exchange for this data, which is, and I don't know how valuable this is, you get to make that call. You can say, hey, G, send the Roomba to the kitchen.
Yeah.
The back of the kitchen. So that's like, you're like, oh, is that worth it? It might be.
Yeah.
And then
Roomba, get the hell out of my room.
Yeah. So with this information, though, Google can start providing context in the smart home, which is actually really important because right now we don't have context or good context. And we suffer for it because we have to program all this stuff and explain all these things via weird nomenclature, like turn on movie night or all of that. So, and if you don't want to do this, you are not automatically opted in. So you have to opt out. So that's really important.
I agree.
And this is only a certain type of Roomba, by the way, y'all.
I agree.
And Stacey, how does it work? I saw in the story, sorry, as a question, I saw in the story it also said that it could help in terms of things like saying which light to turn on and what part of the room and how does that work not just with the Roomba but with the rest of IoT? What could Google bring you in its home suite?
Well, so if it knows that there are lights on in a room and it knows you're not home, maybe it can send you a thing saying, hey, you're not here, but all your lights are on. Do you want me to turn some off? I don't know. Is that
valuable? You're going to need this kind of information if you want a smart home.
If you want a smart home, you will need this. If you want a home that can do this for you, what I really don't want to see, though, is I would rather, and we'll see, this is going to be a really arduous, crappy process. Amazon does this already with hunches, where if you do something, it's like, hey, by the way, I see this is happening. Do you want to fix that? I don't actually want my home to talk to me so much. My home has never talked to me.
Yeah.
So I want it to get good really fast so it doesn't actually require my input. But we are going to go through this awkward adolescence phase.
So let me ask a couple of things here. What was the Google cell phone thing that you where you could map the room for AR and stuff? What was
Tango, that called? Project Tango.
Tango. So is this is a less ambitious version? Is this data almost as good as what Tango would deliver?
I don't know, actually. So these cameras, they have low light. They have low resolution cameras on them, and they have an understanding of depth. I don't know if they can identify the brand of dishwasher you're using, for example. So, right.
But here's the other thing about this that I keep on fantasizing about and that I'm surprised I haven't seen more action in this, is imagine the utility of this for blind people. Mm-hmm. I've long thought that you have something in your ear that gives you a kind of a sound thing. You follow the sound a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right to go where you want to go.
Yeah.
But if you map environments, internal and external, I just think that could be incredibly freeing. And I'm shocked that I haven't seen more efforts to do that. Maybe I'm just being naive. Maybe they're out there. I don't know. But this kind of data makes that possible.
You're muted, Stacey.
Sorry. So focus on this for a moment, Jeff. And Leo, you talk, and I will tell you in a moment once I look it up. The company that is doing this for blind people with a pair of glasses.
Yeah, I've seen stuff kind of like that. Anyway, I think it's a good idea.
It's a good idea.
There is an AI. I had a caller on my radio show this weekend. Aria. A-R-I-A.
A-I, no, A-I-R-A.
Ira.
Ira, sorry. Yes,
that augmented makes more reality. Sense. Oh, that's neat. Using AI. Wow.
Wait, is this the same thing?
I think this is what the guy called me on the radio show to tell me about.
Oh, there you go. See?
Yeah. So
it connects them to a trained professional agent who is dedicated to further enhancing
this. This is like Be My Eyes. Be My Eyes does this too. But one that will, there is an Android app that will read money, tell you what color something is, will give you a lot of feedback about your environment. And I think it's just the next step is to say, you're on Main Street. There's going to be an intersection in 30 feet. The button to press the walk sign is on the left, that kind of thing. And I have seen, maybe it's sticks that have sound as you move it around. But I have seen stuff like that. It's out there.
There's a cane with haptic feedback.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah,
it was
a
project, though.
If you consider what you can do with driving now, and you consider the level of data that exists around environments, and you consider the abilities to give various forms of feedback, words, sounds, haptic warnings, it's not a big market. There's not a lot of money to be had there, but it just strikes me that it could be so life-changing.
This is thanks to the chat room, this is the app. It's called Seeing AI, and it is actually, maybe it was Johnny Jett told us about that, a free app that narrates the world around you. So as you walk around, the app will tell you what's going on. So that's Let's see how this...
Is that a face recognition too?
Yeah, it looks like it had face...
See, and by the way, folks, a good use of it.
Yes, that's right. Seeing
An
AI.
An experiment to describe your surroundings with Seeing AI.
Seeing AI is an ongoing research project. And in the app, we've also included some of our more experimental features, though you have to turn those on in settings. One of these is the ability to describe a general scene. When you take a photo,
see if we can,
the algorithm detects more things in the book earlier.
Processing. Probably a man sitting on a couch using a laptop.
Wow.
Take picture. Processing. A bus that is parked on the side of the road. Button. Take picture. Processing. Probably a box filled with different types of food on a table.
So this is kind of what we were talking about the other day with the bananas. Seeing AI, it's Microsoft.com/seeing-AI. And it is available for, it looks like iOS only. It is not, I misspoke. It's not Android.
There.
Of course, you could scan barcodes using audio beeps to guide you. Speak text, point at a sign, read text. Recognize friends, Jeff. And describe faces and emotions. Wow.
Well, the other use of that is for autism.
Right. Emotions.
Is being able to
read emotions.
Yeah, to describe emotions and give cues that someone can't see. That's just it's just when people get all moral panicky about, oh my God, all the bad things they can do, I just want a constant refrain of yes, but look to what this can do.
Well, here's one to keep in mind. And you can totally see how with spectacles and augmented reality, this could be huge.
Oh, yeah.
It can also be a little, we'll have to adjust to this because I don't, for example, want to walk into a bar and have everyone look at me and know instantly who I am, for example.
Right.
I mean, that is
the
world
I agree.
We're describing. And it is...
But that's a matter of norms. If the blind person can find you...
And it's only somebody in your contact list, presumably.
Right. I mean, there's ways you can say there's appropriate uses and inappropriate uses of any technology.
Right. But we tend to, in the tech world, open it up to everyone, realize that, oh, maybe that wasn't a great idea. Right. And then...
Because that's up to us as the people to... Now, the tech world shouldn't police us. We should police ourselves.
Yeah. No. Think about something like this. Let's pretend that I had a stalker.
I understand why you don't want this. I think it's absolutely legitimate.
And Jeff, I would encourage you actually. So in college, I did have a stalker. It was a very scary experience. And I will tell you that I come to technology with a very different perspective because of that experience that is not techno panic. It is really a matter of self-preservation. So just run, when you get excited about something, run that through the hands or run that through the scenario of, if I am a person who does not want to be recognized because it's actively dangerous for me, what are the tools in place to make that safer?
Yeah, good advice. Good advice, yes. But I also want to say that before we get regulators ready to ban something, as a German regulator was going to ban the use of geo and facial recognition in the same thing, imagine the benefits at the same time.
Well, and that gets kind of back to
this discussion about what to do.
Yeah, and that gets back to this culture thing, right? Like, there's lots of people in the world of Silicon Valley that have never had a stalker, right? They're not thinking like that.
Yeah,
whereas if you get more people involved who have that, then this is one way that, you know, diversity actually helps improve technology in a way that maybe makes regulation less necessary.
Yeah. All right. I said you guys could pick stories. Stacey, what's your story?
My story is from The Atlantic. Oh, we want to talk about techno panic. This is about the Amazon selling machine. And I liked the story to a certain point. I think it's really important to draw people's attention to how Amazon's ad business works, where it gets its data from, and how we're increasingly buying products like Kindles and tablets and God only knows what else that are showing us highly relevant ads, and why advertisers are really excited about it because Amazon has so much data about purchase intent.
And this comes from Amazon's quarterly result, which said that they are a huge ad company. They are now number three after Facebook and Google selling digital ads.
Yep.
Wow. Brands will spend $4.6 billion in advertising on the Amazon platform this year, according to eMarketer. Wow.
And I think it's going to reach...
$16 billion by 2020. $8 billion this year, 2020, $16 billion, according to Piper Jaffray. And in fact, that means it will make them more money than its big profit center right now, Amazon Web Services.
So that assumes web services stay still. Yeah, anyway. Right.
But there is, I guess the point is that Amazon now has a huge incentive to beef up its advertising, and it obviously has been.
Well, it's less an incentive. It's more that it's drawing attention to the fact that Amazon has this huge advertising business that none of us really think about.
Right.
And the key to that is data.
Right.
They have so much data.
Yep.
Well, and they have the most important kind of data. So search data used to be the best data because you were like, well, someone's looking for it. They really want it.
Right.
Amazon has purchase data.
Right.
Purchase and intent.
And intent. Like when I search Amazon, I'm searching for a product that I actually want to buy. I don't just window shop on Amazon. Okay, I do. But anyway, the reason I picked this story is because there is the perspective to make all this sound really evil was, oh, now Amazon has ads everywhere and we're going to move to this era of hyper-consumerism and that's bad. And the implication is that it's Amazon's fault because they're showing us more ads. And I think going in with the social, like changing our social habits and mores as we advance technology, this is a really important thing to talk about. The role that consumerism needs to play in our lives as people become more adept at marketing to us. I think most people realize that just buying random stuff is a fairly hollow thing. I think we need to start having those conversations. We need to start talking to our kids about it. We need to start practicing what we preach on this front. And so I thought the story was interesting. I didn't love how it approached it, but I do think it's an important thing we should start talking about.
And like everything we talk about, this is exactly the kind of thing you talk about, Jeff, where you could see some real benefits to consumers. If Amazon knew that I was running out of laundry powder and said, do you want some more? That would be a value. There's a lot of valuable things Amazon could do that would be advertising, as well as many things that would not be so good and like encouraging rank consumers.
Though what still gets me is right, and you could put in preferences. You could say that I want only things that come from renewable sources, and they can start rating things. They can do all kinds of good things. But what gets me is the stupidity of programmatic retargeting and advertising. That is to say, you look at the boots on Amazon and they follow you around for months.
Yeah,
Amazon worse knows you bought them.
You buy the boots Amazon on Amazon. Knows they you follow them, you
still
around
keeps
for months.
Advertising exactly. So that it's still, I've been pounding the desk.
Yeah.
It's stupid.
It figures, and you bought them before. Maybe you want another pair.
Yeah.
Well,
they're not thinking like people.
No.
So, yes, that's a thing. But I think the issue to think about here and what we should start talking about more is how do we teach our kids, how do we internalize within ourselves that we don't need to buy as much stuff? That we don't need to buy everything we see, that it's not going to make us happy. Because I think
that's not up to Amazon.
Yeah, again,
this story portrays like it's Amazon's fault. But no. I think it does illustrate an issue that we actually really do need to start talking about. And, you know, there's the idea of like, is this like tobacco? Is it inherently addictive? I don't think so, but maybe if you show it, I think for children it might be.
Could weaponize it. I would never put it beyond Silicon Valley to figure out a way to Skinner box Amazon purchases.
Ching, ching. So, yeah.
You get gold points. Isn't that what SNH green stamps were? Really?
Well, they have those now for like loot boxes. And can I just tell you for children today?
Oh, loot boxes.
Well, it's not just loot boxes. It's like every toy now has a secret, like I guess it's kind of like Cracker Jacks, but you buy like a $6 or $8 figurine and you have no idea what is inside. And my daughter is like sucked on these like little unicorn things. I don't even know what they are. Unicornios, unicorn mermaid combos.
Here's the good news. She will grow out of it.
I hope so.
Oh, yeah. My daughter, you know, we went through Beanie Babies, Weebles.
Yeah, but what are subscription boxes? Just some of them are just basically like, ooh, here's a mystery.
Yeah.
And we're like,
no,
oh.
That's what loot boxes are. You bet. You know, it's got to be something good. It's gambling.
Yeah. It's training them in a way, and it's kind of affecting their brains.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Reuters article from the chat room. Kids apps may have a lot more ads than you think. Those cute little apps your child plays with are likely flooded with ads, some of which are totally age inappropriate. According to researchers at the Journal of Developmental and Behavioral Pediatrics, 95% of commonly downloaded apps marketed to or played by children ages 5 and under contain advertising. 95%, 5 and under. Wow.
That's because it's free.
It's free. The kids often can't tell where the game leaves off and the ad begins. There's science to show that children aged 8 and younger can't distinguish between content and advertising.
They can't. And that's, I mean, there is, like, when you advertise to children, you are really, we should have much stricter regulations about that, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just because I've watched. Yeah.
Well, we had them on TV, but I guess we haven't gotten around getting them for.
Do you remember? Oh, they're bringing all these back now, but I just watched the Care Bears movie with my daughter because she was feeling nostalgic. And I was like, wow, this actually has content. But I rewatched He-Man and I was like, oh, this was terrible.
Oh.
This was really bad. And I love that show. That's and I had Castle Grayskull and all the She-Ras and everything.
This stuff is not new.
No.
Any more than SNH Green Stamps is new.
No.
But it's been weaponized. It's become so much more effective than it used to be. All right, Jeff, your pick.
So, the one that kind of I really loved this week was the .new domain.
.new?
So that now if you want to start a new doc, you just put in doc.new and Google knows in Google Docs to give you a new doc, a blank doc.
Do you want me to call up Andrew?
Wow. Andrew doesn't like this, or is he?
No, it's just Google using a top level domain. So it's a good.
Yeah, it's all it is. But why wasn't it done 10 years ago? It's one of those things that seems so obvious in hindsight.
They didn't have top level domains.
But how long have we had top level domains?
This is where we have to ask Andrew, only for the last few years.
But we've had it for a few years. You ask Andrew, please. Yeah,
if you're saying if I go to this week in google.new, it will create a
no,
new...
No, 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 no. If you simply in on Chrome type doc.new,
yeah,
it opens up a new Google Doc for you.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
You got it?
Yeah, doc.new. And...
And then...
Because I'm logged into Google.
Exactly, because it knows you. And
can
you
I do doc.sheet and doc.
Yes.
I can?
And there's various forms of it. Yes. It's just elegantly beautiful.
Save your questions.
Beautiful.
Andrew's coming.
What?
If you want him.
Tell me why. Yes, how does he know all about this?
Because
he's
knows
a domain name person.
Oh.
And this gives me a chance to go check in on Halloween costume prep with my daughter. So this is doubly handy.
What is the daughter going to be this year?
She is going as a bodyguard for one of her friends who is going as a pop musician that I can't recall. So she has got all black and a bubble gun. And she's going to stand most of the time. She and her other best friend are going to stand on each side of her other best friend.
I noted this is a trend this year in Halloween is these group costume. I mean, it's not that new, but yeah, we went to a haunted house that was attended mostly by high school and younger, but mostly high school kids. And the one popular one, which I thought was a little sad, was the Playboy Punny and Hugh Hefner. So a guy would wear a smoking jacket there were like a half dozen of these groups and a little yachting cap. And then he'd be surrounded by three or four women or girls. They were really girls in bunny ears and various forms of scanty costumes. That was a little weird.
Yeah, that is weird. I went as a chicken one year in high school and my friend went. No, I was a giant chicken, and my friend went as a farmer with a machete.
Oh, that's cute.
Not a machete, a little fake axe.
A machete. That's even better.
Not a machete, but yeah.
Chicken soup, anybody?
You were a scared chicken.
I stayed far away from him. It was fun, but they don't, yeah, that's not a sexy costume.
Are there other things I can do with this doc.new thing? Here comes Andrew. Here comes the hubby.
System.
I'll be back.
We've never, so this is the Halloween exchange. Stacy is putting on her costume as Andrew Higginbotham. And boy, it's a really good costume. Stacy looks just like her husband. It's hey, Andrew, we've not met. Well, I've met in person, but we've not met on this show. Welcome.
No, you've been on the show once, I think.
Oh, has he been on before? Okay.
Well, maybe with a guest host.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
So we were talking about this weird thing Google's doing with .new. Mm-hmm. And Stacy says you're a domain name expert. Why? How are you a domain name expert?
That's what I do. That's I blog about domain names on domainnamewire.com. And it's a little niche, but it's kind of exciting, I guess. Probably not to most people.
No.
But yeah.
That's awesome. That's what I do. You should be on the show sometime. Domainnamewire.com.
Right,
yeah. So what is this .new and how does that work?
Yeah, so this is actually pretty clever what Google's done. So back in 2012, you could apply for these new extensions, and that's when Google got a .app, which I believe might be what I talked about on the show when you weren't on it one time.
Oh, okay.
But they applied for a lot of these names. They got .google, for example, which they used for a few different things. And so .new was one of the ones I got. I don't know why they got it. Oh, Stacy's going to laugh. My last name's not Higginbotham, but
oh, it's okay. Oh, she's laughing.
Yeah, you could hear it in the background.
Well, can we hyphenate it?
It's Alleman.
Alleman.
But you're not going to be able to.
I don't know how to spell that. That's okay.
You can just say Andrew.
Andrew.
Just put Andrew.
I think he should be Andrew Higginbotham. I really do.
Mr. Higginbotham, yes. Yeah. I think that's
We're so, keeping it, Andrew.
So .new was one of the ones that they bought. And so this is pretty clever, I think, creating a shortcut out of these domain names. So a lot of people are creating forwards from one of these new domain names to another. But for example, I just this afternoon needed to create a new Google Doc. So I typed doc.new into the browser. And it's essentially a web forward, right? It's forwarding it to a web address that's then opening up a new doc. But it's
so in
it's
the DNS. They is it a script or is it simply a DNS? Is it like a name entry or?
I imagine it's just like a URL forward, right?
A generic URL that creates a doc, but because you're logged into your Google account, that doc is saved under your Google account.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So
which they could have done years ago, right?
I mean, sure.
Under that structure, they could have had a different name. It wasn't .new or something else.
Yeah.
But to use the URL to do a function within Google, because starting a new doc is a pain. You got to open Drive. You got to go to the thing. You got to say what is new. What is it? It's a new blank document. Da 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 da. Yeah. You just give it to me. Now it's. I think it's incredibly clever. I think it's just elegantly clever.
I agree.
Yeah. I mean, right now I keep WordPad and Notepad docked on my PC so that if I need to make some quick notes, I just do it in there. But now if I can just type new.doc or new.sheet and open up a spreadsheet, I think that is pretty clever. And you're right, Jeff. I mean, they could have done that for a long time. They didn't need a new top-level domain name to do that. But I think they're probably looking at it and they're like, well, what are we going to do with this name?
Now that we own it, yeah.
that new. You know, originally these companies thought that there'd just be a lot of demand for these new top level domain names, so that people would go register, you know, twit.new or something that, or twit.app. And the demand hasn't really been there, at least to the level that people expected. And so I think this is kind of a clever way that also brings awareness that there's more than .com to the right of the
right.
dot.
Right, and Andrew, what fascinates me too is that we in media think of everything as content. So a domain is going to point to content. The fact that a domain is used to launch a function is just a different way to think.
It is. It is.
Right? Have you seen anything like that from anyone else?
I can't think of anything. And I think I would have heard about it. I mean, there are a lot of people that are taking names and just forwarding it somewhere else. But you're exactly right. To have it do a function which I guess is made possible by the fact that there are web apps, if you want to call Google Docs that.
Yes.
I think it's clever, and I think it's novel as well.
Okay, that only works within Google, obviously.
Well, see, I'm going to do this. I'm going to create a incognito tab so that I'm not logging in Google and entering doc.new. And I think this will still work. I think the redirect, yeah. The first thing, though, it's going to have me do is say, it says sign in.
Yeah.
So the other way they could have done it is a redirect that creates a doc, but until you save it. It doesn't, as soon as you save it, it says, okay, but you got to save it to your account. Would be another way to work.
Ooh.
It's interesting. Docs.
So I liked that. That was my thing for the week. I thought that was.
Andrew, thank you. Nice to see you again.
You. Yeah, you bet.
Take care.
Stacy's waiting back there on the
Pilates. I see her on the Pilates reformer. Stacy, can you do a couple of little. Yeah. No, she's not going to do that for us. While Stacy and Andrew are rearranging, let me talk about our sponsor. How about that? WordPress.com. WordPress is where I make my home on the net, leolaporte.com. And in fact, I just got my 12-year badge from the WordPress app. I love the WordPress app, by the way. It's a great way to post Android or iOS. When we were on vacation, it was the easiest way for me to take a picture and put it up because I didn't have Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. I put it all on the blog, and I think that's just great. It made it just like posting on Instagram using the WordPress app. I can also use the app to moderate comments. By the way, the best comment moderation and anti-spam stuff in the world at WordPress.com. And to see my stats. I even get notifications when somebody new follows me, which makes you feel pretty good. WordPress.com is the place to make your website, whether it's a business or an individual. In fact, every individual ought to have their own website, their own place on the web that's truly yours, where stuff you upload stays with you. Images, video, audio, and more go right to WordPress.com, and you can import and export content to and from your site because it's yours. It's your home, your content. It's not Mark Zuckerberg's content. It's not Jack's content. It's not Larry's content. It's your content. You can choose from hundreds of designs to match your vision, to establish your brand. You don't need design experience. You don't need web experience. You just need to have something to say. And if you're a business, you got to have a place on the web that's yours, not anybody else's. And that's where you can sell stuff, too. They've got great e-commerce solutions. Grow your audience. Reach new customers with built-in search engine optimization. That's part of the reason you have to have a website, because you want people, when they search for your name or your business name, to find your business, not something somebody said about your business, but your business. That's what WordPress.com is so great at. And 24/7 help when you need it, anytime. WordPress plans start at just $4 a month. Some of the biggest companies in the world use WordPress, including, by the way, 32% of all the websites in the world. That's going up. Almost a third of all the websites in the world. One third of all the websites in the world run on WordPress. Right now, you'll get 15% off any new plan purchase when you go to WordPress.com/twig to create your new website. WordPress.com/twig. Get 15% off right now. WordPress.com/twig. We thank WordPress for their support. How's the costume going, Stacy? She's all bodyguarded up. Oh, you're muted.
The key part is done. The getting on of the wig. I was going to have a purple wig, but my daughter decided she wanted the purple wig.
Oh, so you're going to do a costume too?
No, because I'm not going trick or treating.
You have to do candy.
I do have an Elsa costume in the closet, but it's not 2014, so.
Nobody would know who you are. Is it Elsa the Lioness from Born Free, that Elsa?
Really?
Really? Really, Leo?
Really?
Really?
Let's just let this go, okay?
It's time for the Google changelog. That one.
There we go.
I did this morning with Gboard, the Google keyboard. You can use it on iOS or Android. And I set it up on Android. I'll show you my new Google Gmoji. I don't know what you call it. Sticker. That's me.
Gmoji.
My Gmoji. You take a selfie. And the Gmoji turns it into you. And then you can use it as a sticker. Or did I do it on the other phone? Maybe I did it on this phone. Let's do it on this phone.
Somewhere on the rundown, I have mine that I made.
Did you?
Yes. Under other, is it?
Okay. We'll find
out. You guys all made Gmojis?
Well, it just happened. So you have time. You won't be.
How do I make a Gmoji?
Well, I was just about to show you if I can, but okay. I got to find somewhere to type. Okay. Here we go. Okay. And then I get the keyboard. And then, I can't remember now. Is it this sticker here? Search stickers. Oh, let's add a new sticker. Yeah, yeah. And here it is. It says, your minis. Customized stickers based on you. Create. So I have to allow, I have to get a picture of me. Okay, ready? Okay, now it's Gmojiing me. Creating a mini. Zip, zip, zip. So you need to be using the Gboard on Android or iOS. And that kind of looks like me, right? Do you like it?
Where's my sticker option?
And I can, of course, add different, hairstyles or, it knew I have gray hair and kind of grayish eyebrows. So that's kind of cool. Got my face a little dark. I'll make it a little lighter. I don't have facial hair, but I could add it. Facial marks. Yeah. Old man marks. And then I got to have some glasses. How about a monocle? Oh, how about it? And now I'm going to save that out. Now what it's done is it's created a bunch of stickers based on that. I'm done. So there's all my, that's me. See?
I'm not seeing this option.
Oh.
I feel so bereft.
Bereft.
Well,
I see. What? I want this now. This is actually something I would use. I'm an active sticker user.
What's nice is they're not, they don't have the uncanny valley of the.
Someone pointed out that if I'm in Texas because of the biometric stuff.
Oh, you're kidding me. Available in Texas panic. And Northern California.
Moral panic. See not what available. It does to you? You can't do a Gmoji.
Okay, yes, but the reason why I can't do a Gmoji is because they don't want my face being used to unlock weird things. So
can you
it's
do Memoji on your iPhone?
I don't have an iPhone because I'm not a fan of Apple. We can talk later about that.
That seems rude.
Doesn't it, though? Maybe I can do it on my computer?
Maybe you can. You need a VPN to pretend you're somewhere else.
Oh, I have one. But if I turn on the VPN, our connection goes to heck.
And then apparently, how well did Jeff do is...
Well, it's not what you just did. It's something different then.
What are you doing? You've got a cat. You look like Mark Zuckerberg in that picture.
Well, it's a little younger than I am. I saw no way to put wrinkles in.
What is going on? Jeff, I got bad news for you. Okay.
That's Bitmoji.
This is not, I guess Bitmoji is another company and you can
so
do
Bitmoji
that.
Bitmoji I can do.
But
that's
story,
owned by Snapchat.
It mentions Bitmoji. Yeah.
Yeah, that's owned by Snapchat and you can do Bitmoji in your Snapchat app.
And you can get to it through the Google keyboard now.
Ah, nice.
Oh, that is nice.
That's the issue.
Oh, you guys, this is just like
Emoji minis are emoji sized stickers that look to you like you. Okay. Yeah, that's what I did as an emoji mini. It's gotten the nomenclature's out of control.
I don't even know where to check on which keyboard I'm using.
You should have you show me your keyboard. I'll tell you if it's Gboard.
Okay, we're gonna do a keyboard diagnostic. The first time ever on national podcasts.
Of course, it's too much contrast. So you're not gonna see it.
It's too bright. Yeah.
Okay.
So you go into keyboards.
Go to your app. Oh, sorry. Go, Leo.
Well, you just
I was going to my settings.
Go into settings.
And which one is it?
Search for keyboard.
Oh, I got to search. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
search is your best friend in settings. And then it's under languages and inputs. And the virtual keyboard, you should have several choices. But on an Android, Google device, Gboard should be the first one. But you can add keyboards if you want.
Right, which is what. So I think I do have it then. Yes.
Yeah. That's the default on Pixels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Advance. Go back to me. No. I'm going to see if I can force the update.
Maybe that's all you need is an update. Meanwhile, the change log continues with a improvement in CAPTCHA. Let me see if I can pull this up. This comes from the Google Webmaster blog. Captures of those really annoying things.
Find the buses in the pictures.
Yeah,
find
really the cars hate this in the one. Pictures. So this is Google's version of it called ReCAPTCHA. They bought the ReCAPTCHA tool Carnegie Mellon first created. And initially, ReCAPTCHA was used to, in effect, get people to do text recognition on books that were poorly scanned or couldn't quite be recognized. So you'd get two words. Remember this in the early days? You'd get two words, one that was identifying you as not a robot, but the other was helping them with book scans. Then it turned into street signs. Remember that? It was street numbers. Same thing. You were helping Street View figure out where it was on street numbers they couldn't easily read. So there was ReCAPTCHA 1, then ReCAPTCHA 2. ReCAPTCHA 3, we are fundamentally changing how sites can test for human versus bot activities by returning a score to tell you how suspicious an interaction is and then eliminating the need to interrupt users with challenges at all. This would be nice. ReCAPTCHA version 3 runs adaptive risk analysis in the background to alert you of suspicious traffic while letting human users enjoy a frictionless experience on your site. We're introducing a new concept called action, a tag you can use to define the key steps of your user journey and enable ReCAPTCHA to run its risk analysis in on those steps. So users won't get a pop-up, but if they're doing things like clicking too fast or, you know, acting in an unhuman-like way, it might be more suspicious than you might. You'll get a score, and you might, as the site, decide to pop up something more difficult. So, completely not clear exactly what it's doing, but we've already seen with Google, sometimes you'll get a checkbox that says, just merely, I'm not a robot, and it doesn't give you anything else. Remember that?
Right.
Lately, they're doing those terrible ones where you get 8-9 images and you have to pick the street signs out.
Oh, awful.
Horrible. This one is apparently better because you won't get interfered with as all as a user. As long as you're acting like a user. Remember, Google knows so much about you. They know whether really that the owner of the phone is a human or not. You know, that the interaction.
They know if you are human. They or know. If you're just a bot. They know if you're going to buy something and.
Maybe you are.
Even
not.
If you're hot.
Ooh. You took it weird. Okay. You went weird with it.
That's appropriate for Google, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Hot or not. Supreme Court is hearing right now, or today, an internet privacy case involving Google. It's an $8.5 million settlement that's been challenged by an official at a Washington-based conservative think tank. And apparently, I'll give you the case first. A California resident, Paloma Gauss, filed a proposed class action lawsuit in 2010 claiming Google's search protocols violated federal privacy law by disclosing users' search terms to other websites. As you know, when you do a search, the referral from Google will include how you got to that site. And I've used
that. Which was incredibly useful for media sites and other sites, and now we can't
Absolutely.
Do it.
Google, a lower court, upheld the settlement. The company agreed to pay in 2013 to resolve the claims. The settlements, known as CPRAE awards, are unfair, says critics, and encourage frivolous lawsuits, conflicts of interest, and collusion between both sides to minimize damages for defendants while maximizing fees for plaintiffs' lawyers. Google did agree in the settlement to disclose on its website how users' search terms are shared, but did not change its behavior. The three main plaintiffs got $5,000 each. The attorneys, $2.1 million. Under the settlement, the rest of the $8 million would go to organizations or projects that promote internet privacy, Stanford AARP, but nothing to the other millions of Google users who the plaintiffs were to have represented in the class action. CPRAE awards apparently are rare. They give money that can't. And you know what? I think this is probably a good thing because how many times have you gotten a postcard? I got a postcard from a Pop Chips class action lawsuit that entitled me to a free bag of Pop Chips.
I would have taken it.
Or sometimes it's like for $1.50, right? Because they spread the class out over so many people. So CPRAE awards give money that can't feasibly be distributed to participants to unrelated entities as long as it's in the plaintiff's interests. So the judges are hearing arguments about whether this CPRE award is legit. And apparently some of the liberal justices, remember the court is now split 5-4, conservative liberal, emphasize such settlements can funnel money to good uses. In other words, that it makes sense. Justice Alito, one of the conservatives, raised concern the money would go to groups some plaintiffs might not like. So how could that be a sensible system? Justice Roberts, another conservative, said that AARP engages in political activity.
So that was actually, when I saw the AARP on there, I was like, they don't fight for privacy.
Yeah.
They fight for, like, yeah. I actually thought that was kind of a questionable use of sending this. So
Roberts
I'm falling
also,
in line here.
Yeah, yeah. Roberts also said it was fishy that settlement money could be directed to institutions to which Google already was a donor, including the alma mater of the lawyer involved in the case.
Yeah.
Brett Kavanaugh noting that one. Ruth Bader Ginsburg said at least plaintiffs get an indirect benefit from the settlement. Seems like the system is working, said Justice Sotomayor. So you can see how the fault lines of the court are falling out here. Although, it's really hard in arguments to know how the court's going to go or even what the justices think. Often I've listened to enough. By the way, these are all recorded and available online, going way, way back. And
Supreme Court decisions?
Yeah. Not decisions, hearings.
The arguments, yes.
Oye, 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 I think is the site. Let me see if I can find it. Oye.org. OYEZ.org. A multimedia archive of Supreme Court cases. You can listen to Brown versus Board of Education, if you want. Apple versus Pepper. Yeah, isn't that cool? Let's go back in time. Let's see how far back this goes. Oh, yeah, 1850.
What?
Do they have recording mediums? Are we going to hear that?
Maybe not. Maybe some of these don't have media, but you can see a lot. This is I love OYE, by the way. Great site. So, yeah, not all of them have media, but many of them do. They do record these arguments, so you can actually listen to them. I really like OYE, OYEZ.org.
I like saying OYE.
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 That's what they say at the beginning when they when you let all who have business with the Supreme Court of the United States of America. OYE, OYE, OYE. What does that mean? It means come and see and be seen, something like that.
Really? Oy is like ear in like Latin languages, but I don't know.
A traditional interjection said two or three times in succession. Yeah, we know that.
In the court of law, it means hear ye.
Oh.
That's your right.
That's
so it
exactly
is ear. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. It's Anglo-Norman, the plural imperative form of oyer, from the French ouir to hear.
Oh, because French used to be the language
of government.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Guillaume le Conquérant came wandering over the channel and took care of those savages.
1066. Right. You want to hear it? You want to hear what it sounds like?
Oh, yeah? Sure.
The Honorable, the Chief Justice, and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States. Oh, yay, oh, yay, oh, yay. All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States, are admonished to draw near and give their attention, for the court is now sitting. God save the United States and this honorable court.
That gives me chills.
I second that.
Does that not give you chills?
Right.
I get
does,
chills
when
I hear that.
It does, and it's also, oyey.
Oyey, oyey, oyey. I love it. So, yeah, that's a great site, by the way. And so I guess you probably could at some point. The arguments were heard today, so they probably aren't up yet. And that, with a little sidebar, is your Google changelog. Here's one that'll make Jeff see red.
Ugh.
You don't like it when I start a story like that, do you, Jeff? A blockchain site, a crypto site called Breaker Magazine, noticed that they were getting, and I get these every day, and I'm sure you do too, Stacey, lots of solicitations to put stuff on your site.
Even I do.
Yeah.
I've got no audience left on a blog.
Yeah. Here's an example. Hello. I'm representing a blockchain PR company from Moscow. Would like information on the rate for advertising on your website. Thanks, Nikolai K. Except that this was written by a phony person, Nikolai Kostarev, a journalist created by Breaker Mag to see how many Bitcoin news sites would accept paid content.
Yeah, the Bitcoin content world is nefarious.
It's a test. It's not entrapment if it's not by the cops. The outlet replied to that email. Then they would send another one saying, hey, thanks for the reply and information. Many of my ICO, initial coin offering clients, want coverage written about them, but some would like it not to be marked sponsored. Is that possible? Of the 22 outlets who replied, 12 of them, more than half, were willing to publish paid content without disclosing it as such. The prices quoted range from a low of $240 for Crypto Ninjas to a high of $4,500 for News BTC. Now, I have to admit, this is from a competing site that created this Breaker Mag. So,
yeah,
but it's not a surprise. And it is the case that we all get these solicitations all the time.
I thought you were going to bait me with the story about the journalist telling Twitter to get rid of the RT.
Well, we could do that one, too. Twitter That'll should kill the retweet, writes Taylor Lorenz in Atlantic. The feature derails healthy conversation and preys on users' worst instincts. I don't disagree with this. In fact, I told you some time ago when I still was using Twitter that my trick to make Twitter more useful was to turn off retweeted content. You could do that in
Jerks is the problem you had. I follow smart people, and I find the RTs extremely valuable.
Okay. They tend, though, to gin up more controversy, right? Because thousands of retweets and... All right.
Yes, there are certain retweets. I mean, I retweet stuff often. I'll see a cool study. I see someone making a really good point. And I'm like, oh, hey, look at this. And... I mean, people seem to like it, but yeah. I can see. I mean, there are people who retweet crap. So,
yeah.
So I figure follow. I'll see the original.
That's easy.
I'll see the original without seeing the retweet.
I don't like. I like it because I follow a really diverse group of people, and they retweet stuff from their social circles. So, yeah,
that makes sense.
You know,
I recuse myself on this topic, not having any knowledge thereof.
Yeah. I think if you follow really awesomely smart people who are really passionate about particular subjects, you'll get some really cool stuff.
I deactivated Leo Laporte, but I did have a links for Twit account that I used to use to put all the links that, as you see on this page, that we were going to talk about. And I took that, and that wasn't following anything. And I only follow news accounts journalists like you guys, but mostly like news. And that's actually been fairly useful. And I preserve that account just in case I hear that somebody dies and I want to find out if they really did.
You want to up your game?
Yeah.
Follow. And I don't know if there's a list of these. Someone should totally create it. Follow the PR accounts of universities' research offices.
Oh, that's interesting.
Oh, yeah.
You get all kinds of cool stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you don't love that, but I love it.
Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, look what people are doing. They're making crazy stuff. Yay, science.
Yeah, okay. That's fun. Lists are very useful. If you can find good lists, that helps a lot. It does get rid of, if you follow legitimate news sources, it gets rid of a lot of the spam and bot activity, right?
I'm sorry. I yawned. I did.
Oh, that was just a yawn. Oh, that wasn't a... No, Leo, you're so ignorant. I don't know how you live.
No, I took some Sudafed, and it was a bad mistake.
Street view car was swept away by a flood. I want to see those images.
Where?
I think the UK. This is from the Independent.
Yeah, the video takes forever to get going.
A car used to map roads for Google Street View. Oh, West Texas.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah, we had a bus go away in the floods.
The problem is the guy
there it goes.
Decided to go around the barrier, because I guess, you know.
I'm busy here. I'm Google. Sorry, I don't have no time for barriers.
Waters will part for me. I'm Moses of the modern age.
So this is, okay, guys, we may mock this, but as someone who's been in defensive driving several times in Texas, well, we just had a school bus actually try to go around the barriers as well.
Now, are you still boiling your water in Austin?
No, I was so mad that the Times did not cover that story. I was like, we are a city of like a million people having to boil our water for a week.
And that was due to floods.
That was due to floods.
Yeah.
Unintended, unthought of consequence of climate change, for my opinion.
I probably shouldn't bring this up at the end of the show, because we are coming to the end of the show. But I'm just that kind of guy. New York Times, a dark consensus about screens and kids. Begins to emerge in Silicon Valley. Here's the pull quote. I'm convinced the devil lives in our phones.
Well, talk about moral panic. That's exhibit A.
The devil lives in our phones. But it does talk about a lot of people in Silicon Valley. Well, that was Athena Chavarria, who works as an executive assistant at Facebook and is now at Mark Zuckerberg's philanthropic arm, the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, who said, I'm convinced, I'm sure she doesn't talk like this, the devil lives in our phones and is wreaking havoc on our children. She does not let her children have cell phones until high school, even now, bans phone use in the car and severely limits it at home. And so this article talks to Chris Anderson, who's, of course, former editor at Wired, geekdad.com, is well known as being anti-tech. On the scale between candy and crack cocaine, it's closer to crack cocaine. Mr. Anderson said of screens, we thought we could control it, and this is beyond our power control. It's gone straight to the pleasure centers of the developing brain. This is beyond our capacity as regular parents to understand. I didn't know what we were doing to their brains until I started to observe the symptoms and consequences, he said. This is a scar tissue talking. We've made every mistake in the book, and I think we got it wrong with some of my kids. Mr. Anderson
said. My favorite part, is where he's like, some of our kids are totally screwed up.
Yeah, this is a great quote. We have glimpsed into the chasm of addiction, and there were some lost years, which we feel bad about. His children attended private elementary school where he saw the administration introduce iPads and smart whiteboards only to, quote, descend into chaos and then pull back from it all. Tim Cook said he wouldn't let his nephew join social networks. Bill Gates banned cell phones until his kids were teens. And, of course, Steve Jobs famously wouldn't let his kids anywhere near iPads. I think there's some merit in this.
I think you do have to. I mean, I sit in restaurants sometimes and I see families.
All on the phone.
Everybody is looking down.
Yeah.
But so I sit there and I say that, and, you know, it's easy for me to judge. I don't know the situation. I will say that having a 12-year-old, she wants to be on the computer all the time. And we actually started monitoring what she's doing on there and measuring the time, because I think that's really important. And we just have a conversation with her, because I noticed she stopped reading as much. And, it is really easy, though. I mean, I don't know if we've ever had something that will captivate your kid so much for such a long amount of time as parents. And parenting, especially young children, is freaking hard.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I feel like we don't... There's a lot of things to think about here. There's the why am I or my husband the only person with my 3-year-old, for example. She's not 3 now, but you know, we don't have these group settings. They're harder to get to with your kids where they could be entertained. We also have this constant message of like, you must be doing something with your child to engage their brain. There's a lot here.
And I still remember some parents, you know, you read too many books back in the day.
Oh, yeah. Get outside. Get some fresh air.
Really? Someone said that to you?
You'll spoil your eyesight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
What are you going to do? Play video games for a living?
Yeah. So I think it's hard, too, though, that a lot of parents don't know how much screen time their child is actually having. And, like, I mean, I gave my daughter a laptop, and she can take it wherever she wants. But sometimes that's not the best strategy. And that's why we actually started implementing, that's why I started measuring things and starting to implement harder rules for this. And she will go for it. She will sit there for hours and hours if we don't stop it. And, you know, is she going to turn into like some sort of, I don't know, this is Chris Anderson's bad child? I feel like he's got some bad
children. He's got a bad kid. Oh, we lost one.
This one's broken.
I'm trying.
All right, since you baited me, you got to give me a plug.
Okay.
So I think I was in California a few weeks ago to do, we announced today.
Oh, good. Finally. So, yes, we were wondering what you were up to.
Yes. So we announced a project, disclosure, funded by the Facebook Journalism Project, but I'm independent of Facebook, and I received no money from the platforms myself, end of disclosure, to aggregate the signals of quality in news and make them available in more usable, we hope, form to platforms and ad networks and ad agencies and such. So I was out in California meeting with Twitter, Google Search, Google News, YouTube, Mozilla, Microsoft, and such. And so we announced the project today, and it's a white paper, which is another way to say really long blog post. Incredibly long, as I try to go into the details of what it is and what we're doing.
Is it a buzz machine?
No, it's at the Town Night site. It's on the rundown. It's the third from the last in other.
Okay.
So the Town Night, it's a project of Town Night. You see, this is so boring, we lost Stacy.
She's going to feed some candy to the neighborhood children. Yeah. Because they just won't stay on their screens.
No. So it's a project to try to drive more attention and dollars in the long run, we hope, to quality news and to help the platforms and advertisers understand what quality news is, because frankly, they're not very good at it. And I think we need to help.
I like it.
So I just wanted to announce that.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Ba, 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 ba. That was my thing for your announcement there, Jeff.
Thank you. Thank you. I noted it bored you so much you had to leave the room.
Stacy's
No, my dog was whining.
Stacy's got candy to deliver. I have things to do, and I've got my Pikachu costume to put on, and it's going to take a while because it's inflatable. And so we're gonna
awesome.
I should show you, but honestly, it takes a while. We're gonna go to our break and get our picks of the week so we can wrap things up. Jeff Jarvis, Town Night Foundation. The post aggregating signals of quality and news is at medium.com. And his blog is buzzmachine.com. Stacy Higginbotham, stacyoniot.com. And our picks of the week coming up. But first, I want to show you my belt, my slide belts from Brig Taylor. High quality, comfortable, ratchet belts that are easy to adjust. Many of us don't like belts because they just don't do the job they're supposed to do. Hold our pants up. And I've really had a battle with belts over the years, especially because most belts have a couple of holes and they're not flexible enough. That's when I found these slide belts. This, by the way, this slide belt has a brass. No, I don't think this is brass buckle. Which one is this one? This one is a vegan belt, which looks just like leather, vegan leather belt, with a beautiful, I think, gunmetal. Nah, it looks like chrome more to me. And you see how I've engraved it with Twip. Let me show you how the slide belt works. So when you first get the slide belt, you can cut it to length if you want. The buckles are very easily changed, so you can easily change the material or the buckle on your belt du jour if you choose. I'm going to lock the end in here. And then this is the key, is the ratcheting mechanism on the other side. Patented ratchet design with 32 adjustment options. So you always have a belt that fits just right. This is the sound you'll hear in the morning as I dress, as I ratchet my belt in just right. And this is the sound you'll hear later in the day after a big meal as I silently expand the belt. With 32 settings, there's always a perfect fit with my slide belt, and they look great. A wide selection of straps from full grain and top grain leathers to high quality canvas. I'll show you one here. I call this my Cub Scout belt. It's an antique brass buckle with kind of the blue canvas. This is kind of a grown up Cub Scout belt, but it looks great. And because you could change the buckles and belts very easily, it's kind of like an Apple Watch. You always have new looks to try out. They can be worn casually around the house, at the office. They're great for date night. They've got all kinds. Ooh, it's also a great travel belt because it's very easy to take off at security and put right back on. And I have to show you, this is my favorite buckle. This is the Slide Belt Survival Belt. All right, get ready for this. How about a buckle that looks like a normal everyday belt buckle, but contains an ultra-sharp knife, beer opener. Let me close the knife before I hurt myself. Flashlight. And it's a really bright one, by the way. And fire starter. This is the belt you wear out in the wilderness. I wouldn't recommend wearing it into court, however. It is, but that's nice. You just change the buckle and you can wear something else. They have unisex survival belts like this, colorful belts for kids, skinny belts for women. Coming soon, Slide Belt watches with swappable watch bands, again, for ultimate customization. And they offer a one-year warranty, free exchanges, and no-hassle returns. I've got a special offer for you. But before you check that out, check out their gift sets tab at slidebelts.com/twit for some great offers. Now, those sets are already discounted, so this offer doesn't apply to those. When you're ready for a better belt, go to slidebelts.com/twit and use the code twit at checkout and receive 20% off your order. So really, every belt is on sale for us at slidebelts.com/twit. It's now the only belt I wear. Use the code twit at checkout for 20% off your order. And it is not only good looking, practical, but it'll actually hold your pants up. It's an amazing invention. Slide belts. Rethink your belt. Slidebelts.com/twit. This should be their signature sound. I love it.
Andrew is a big slide belt user.
Is he?
He's got a bunch of them. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sad that now Twit gets 20% off. I'm like, oh.
You could have saved lots of money.
Really saved money.
And they have a big range. I mean, the leather belts are, fairly pricey. I don't remember how much I paid, like $60. But then they have very inexpensive ones, too. They have all kinds, even kids' belts.
Yep. That is not pricey. I pay hundreds of dollars
for those. I know. Ladies' belts can be very, very expensive.
For little tiny thin belts.
I know.
So much less leather.
Little things.
Terrible. Stacey, how about a pick of the week from you, my friend?
All right. My pick of the week.
Yes.
It's because it's seasonal and it also tells you something really good. And you may have seen this because it was pretty big. But the New York Times did an AI costume explainer by actually one of my favorite bloggers in the whole wide world. It's an opinion column by Janelle Shane. She goes to AIweirdness.com and she runs like recipes. She runs all kinds of things through neural networks just to see what weirdness they generate. But this article did an excellent job, like being funny, which she is trademark her, and also explaining how neural nets work, which is really hard.
Oh, wow.
And it's remarkably depressing how quickly sexy starts running up in the, it helps you pick your costume basically. And it's sexy ends up there like the second or third iteation of the AI.
Well, that's poorly trained AI, don't you think?
Well,
or maybe AIs are horny.
This talks about how you, because it's not necessarily poorly trained. It's just how it's training itself.
So this explaining it.
Although I loved the New York Times diagram for sexy printer, which is a printer that is putting out a pixelated image. I was like, that is my Halloween costume, sexy printer. So if you haven't seen this yet, go read it. You'll learn something. You'll also be heartily amused. And if you really want to like get bonus points, visit her website because it's freaking awesome.
Wow. That's awesome. Very cool. And I had it up here and now it's gone again. Let me pull it up again. I must have opened something on top of it. It's Halloween. Janelle Shane, let your algorithm choose your Halloween costume.
So scroll down and you'll see the process. So at Epoch One, it shows like it's just looking at words.
Oh, wow.
Like the letters used in the costumes they fed it. So Epoch One has like, if you keep scrolling down, those are the first iteration. That's what came out. You're like, what? But then go down to Epoch Three and you start seeing Captain Kirk. in Darth Vader.
With a K.
Whimsy a rat.
Wow. Jashmashk. Epoch 5. Sexy the Babby Kahepper. Frog Shadown. Ficking Sisterian.
Regun.
It's getting worse. Princess Leia. Well, that's good. Dalk. Huck a your leg. Hucky your on leg. Dutch but chick I like the dancer.
Giant robot box. B was one of my favorites too. I'm like, nice.
Now I have to point out that the illustrations are human driven, not AI driven. Yes. So Strawberry Clown by Epic 9, we're actually getting things. Gummy Cow, Ruth Bader Hat Guy. Buttery Classic.
The best little kid, like Ruth Bader Baby costumes and stuff.
Today. I like it. Yeah, we love Ruth.
Ruth Baby Ginsburg,
Ruth
Jeff.
Baby Ginsburg.
Yes, thank you.
Vampire Chick Shark. I think that's
Sexy
actually.
Sexy Beta Marks.
Kevin is a vampire chick shark today. Centaur Meiji, Dragon Ninja. It's getting pretty good by Epic 11. What is an Epic? Is it a bunch of training?
It's each iteration where you tweak it and then you run it through again to see what it comes up with.
This is related. It's Google's Frightgeist at frightgeist.withgoogle.com. This is Halloween's most popular costumes. Fortnite trending up. Number one nationwide. Video games make up 4% of all costume searches. Spider-Man trending up. Number two nationwide. And you can see what regions. Unicorn, dinosaur, witch, Harley Quinn. That's last year's. Superhero, pirate, rabbit, clown, Wonder Woman, monster, ninja, doll.
I'm surprised we don't see Trump on there.
Yeah, you know, I think it's just too scary.
We're living that reality. It's done.
Jeff Jarvis.
Well, so this is related to Stacey's, but it's a kind of a contrast. Stacey's is AI for what? For stupidity, for wasted time, for yucks. Now we have Google.
Yeah.
Google is starting a $25 million fund AI for humanity.
Oh, nice.
A global competition and that solve big problems. Included in the examples that Google gives on its own post is wildlife conservation, employment in South Africa, a program matched 50,000 candidates with jobs, flood prediction, wildfire prevention, infant health, solving problems. I would imagine the Verge story says like racial bias and other biases in AI. So AI doesn't have to be scary. It doesn't have to be trick or treat. It can
just be treat. I will say to you, I actually think that story that I did was a great thing to show your journalism students because it's a fun way to engage people about.
Oh yeah, I just was
really important. Cheap joke. Oh, I was like, it wasn't just silly.
No. It was just purely a cheap joke.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, but that's a good point.
I was trying for a segue. You see.
Oh, okay.
I was trying for that.
I'm so serious.
I was trying to tie into yours, but no, your standards are just too high.
I'm too sincere. I'm sorry.
Yes, you are.
My pick of the week came from last month, but I actually did it last night. Coach Tony on Medium from the Better Humans Medium section. How to configure your iPhone to work for you, not against you. Now, I'm not saying everything Coach Tony recommends in here is what you should do, but there's, a lot of good things in here, including turning off almost all notifications. Notifications are just a way to steal your brain. Hide social media slot machines. I did Coach Tony one better by deleting them entirely. Disable app review requests. Done. Turn on Do Not Disturb all round the clock. See, Apple allows you to say only allow phone calls from favorites or contacts if you want to be a little broader. And, you know, that's the best way to fight robo-calling is just only get rings when it's people you know. Everybody else goes to voicemail, and guess what? Robocalls never leave voicemails. He says, be strategic about your wallpaper. He actually suggested black wallpaper, which I'm using. He says, because it makes your phone less interesting. It works. And, of course, a lot of phones now have techniques, both Android and iOS, to improve downtime, to limit screen time, and so forth. He's got some good app suggestions in here as well. This is on the Medium blog. The title of it is, and you can just Google, how to configure your iPhone to work for you, not against you. It's long with lots of details, and I don't think anybody's going to do everything he suggests, but there's some really good ideas in here if you're using an iPhone. Even some podcasts you should subscribe to. He doesn't mention ours. Oops, that link is dead. But frankly, I think subscribing to Twig is a very good use of your time, and I encourage you to do so. If you want to hear Twig, you can come by, watch it live. We do it every Wednesday, 1:30 Pacific, 4:30 Eastern, 20:30 UTC. Actually, it's going to be 21:30 UTC starting next week because we go back to daylight standard time. Not daylight. Pacific Standard Time on Sunday. So we move. UTC doesn't, but that means we'll be at 2100 UTC, 2130 UTC next Wednesday. Go to twit.tv/live to watch. You can't watch us on YouTube Live as of right now because yesterday YouTube dinged us for a copyright violation because we dared to comment on Apple's stream. We've appealed, and I'm sure it'll get reversed. That's fair use, right? You journalistic types,
I would say so.
We always run the commentary.
I would argue that it is.
And then we always run their thing, but we don't run it alone. We run it in a box with our explanations of what it means,
Does that mean that Apple complained, or is that an automated process?
It happened so fast. It happened during the broadcast. I suspect it was automated, although it did identify the offending content as from Apple. So I don't know.
Maybe Apple preloaded something to do that.
They've never done that before, and we've done this for 12 years. The appeal will, I think, go to Apple. You know, usually the copyright holder then is notified and they get to decide. So if we're no longer on YouTube Live, thank you, Apple.
Well, does YouTube do a verification process for legitimate media entities?
And in almost always when we get dinged, we appeal it and we say it's fair use and they say yes. They say, okay, sorry about that. YouTube Live is tough because it doesn't take more than one strike to ban you from YouTube Live. So.
How long is the appeal process?
I don't know. It's underway right now. It could be a few days. I'm just saying.
Oye, oye, oye.
We're going to the Supreme Court with this one.
Hear the case of Twit versus Apple.
No, but you still plenty of other places to watch us at twit.tv/live. That's why I recommend that site because that has a list of all of audio and video, by the way. You can watch either way. You can download shows at twit.tv/twig. Best yet, subscribe in your favorite podcast app. No one will ever prevent you from getting it there. And you can watch and listen to every show every week the minute it's available. Thank you so much, Stacey Higginbotham. Good luck with Halloween.
Thank you. I'm excited.
Do you go out with them, follow them, or are they too old for that now?
This year I'm staying home because I was doing this show.
Yeah.
So they just left. And she didn't wear her wig. I could have been in a purple wig.
Oh, man.
Ooh.
That's a bummer. Thank you, Stacey. Have a great day. Have a great week.
Thanks.
We'll see you next time.
You guys too.
You too, Jeff Jarvis. Professor of journalism at the, you know, blah, 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 City University of New York, Town Night Center, blah, blah, blah.
Craig Newmark, Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of New York.
Thank you. Yeah. That was easy. See, buzzmachine.com. Read all of his great books. What Would Google Do? Public Parts, Geek Sparing Gifts and all. And you can find all that at buzzmachine.com. Thank you, everybody, for being here. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Bye-bye.